on May 23rd.
I want to go back to normal.
What's normal?
The Paramount Plus original series, Evil, returns.
We've already hunted werewolves and demons.
And now what? A baby antichrist?
Okie dokie.
Prepare yourself.
You will not beat us.
For the end.
I have visions of hell.
Make it stop. Make it shut up.
You're not gonna survive this.
Evil, the final season. Streaming May 23rd, only on Paramount Plus.
It is the Bama Online Podcast, this one coming to you on a Monday afternoon, April the 5th, 2021. It is April the 5th, correct? Charlie, am I right on that? The days seem to run together.
Oh, you just put me on the spot. I had to look at my watch when you said that. That's one of the hardest things for me to keep up with is the date and like what date goes with what day of the week.
Yeah, it is. I just checked. I just shut down my phone and then hit it again so it'll pull up the home screen, and it is April the 5th. One of the things we can break today on Bama Online with our intrepid reporters that we have, the staff we have, it is in fact Charlie April the 5th.
It's just, if you go back to last March and just how much time I would just spend at home and not having to really go anywhere other than a handful of games, like days of the week, what are they? I don't know.
Like, we know it's Monday, you know. If you get the day of the week right, then you get the answer right. Where you get extra credit is knowing the actual date. That's where you get the extra credit. So we hit both of them there. Anyway, Charlie, let's get into it, man. What a weekend it was. First of all, hope you had a great Easter. I know you're married to a medical professional, and so with her schedule, you kind of get what you get where the holidays are concerned, but hope you had a great Easter.
We did, yeah. We were able to get outside. It was nice weather.
Beautiful, man.
I know it kind of got cold there for a little bit here in Tuscaloosa, but Sunday was really nice, and you know, just enjoyed time together. Still, you know, don't really want to be around the folks too much with, you know, them there. I think they got their second round.
They get the second shots
this weekend or this past week. So, still giving them a little bit of time. But yeah, it was a good Easter weekend. What about you guys?
Yeah, that's kind of where we're all at with our parents, right? We just check in to see where they're at on the vaccination schedules, and yeah, that's kind of where our folks are at as well. With the COVID-19 vaccine, you're like, well, what'd you get? Did you get Pfizer? Did you get Moderna? You know, we've all become these experts on the topic. But no, we had a good one. You're right. The weather was outstanding. We did a little brunch with the youngest, the UA freshmen on Sunday. That's kind of a tradition for us with whoever's around. They're decreasing in numbers, it seems like, more and more every year. But it was great. It was a great Easter Sunday. It wasn't so much a great Friday, as we know, for the University of Alabama community, as Luke Ratliff, University of Alabama student, widely known as Fluffopotamus or Fluffopotamus88, his handle on Twitter. Just stunning for me anyway, Charlie, following on social media on Friday evening and also on our message board, the round table there. We had a couple of threads where it became known that Luke, 23 years old, was apparently dealing with an effect of the COVID-19 virus, and it just seemed to accelerate, seemingly in a span of minutes, it seemed like, Charlie. This all went down with Luke Ratliff on Friday evening.
It did, yeah. You just kind of saw members of the Alabama basketball community start to retweet things from his mom and people close to him, just talking about praying for Luke. And it seemed like just a matter of minutes he was gone after that. It, of course, you know, you got to respect, you know, their personal space, and you know, they put it out there, I guess, as a last ditch effort almost. But you know, it's tough to see, because you know, I still consider myself a young individual. I'm 29, but to hear someone that's a senior at UA and passing away at such a young age is tough. But you know, Luke, if you've watched an Alabama basketball game this season, whether at Coleman Coliseum or on TV, you've probably seen Luke, and he's, you know, he'd almost developed a sort of celebrity status. I mean, you could see whenever he'd go around to road games, especially up in Indianapolis and Nashville, you know, people were stopping and taking pictures with him. That's great to see for a guy that, you know, from all accounts and hearing from, you know, people around him, that he was a shy individual, kind of break out of his shell and get that notoriety. Just to hear him, you know, die at such a young age, it sucks. You know, I was talking to people at the memorial on Saturday out there in front of Coleman. Just, you know, it's a shitty situation, and you hate to deal with it, but you know, seeing the outpour of support from Alabama's coaches, from the players, from everybody in Alabama athletics, it's been, you know, very touching. And you can see how much he meant, not just to the basketball program, but to athletics as a whole. And, you know, Patrick Murphy wearing the plaid jacket out of their game on Saturday, all the teams kind of paying homage to him. It's been great to see, but you hate the fact they even have to do something like that because of what happened.
Absolutely. The golf team, the men's golf team, cranking up an event over in Birmingham on Monday with some houndstooth fabric pinned to their caps and their, you know, their gear and things like that to show support and tribute to Luke Ratliff. It's just been amazing in a lot of ways, too. And I think very much secondarily to, you know, what matters most in all this. Luke has been a fascinating case study in fandom, right? When you combine not only his presence at seemingly everywhere where University of Alabama athletics were concerned, and with an emphasis on men's basketball, obviously, he's front and center. You were there game by game at Coleman Coliseum. Kirk McNair of our staff also. He was part of the backdrop. I mean, he was part of more than the backdrop. He was right there. And so that makes it even more shocking. But again, these days, when you combine the presence that fans are able to develop or supporters are able to develop on social media, and then you combine that with, again, how much we saw Luke, you know, either at games, on television, it really took it kind of took fandom into this 21st century, I guess you could say, where we're at when you combine all the factors in play.
Yeah, I mean, his presence on social media, I think that's maybe where I first kind of made the connections, like, oh, this is the same guy that's in the student section, just because his tweets started popping up on my timeline, not only just because of what they pertain to and what I follow, obviously following everything with Alabama athletics, but I mean, he's a funny and witty person. And, you know, that kind of came through at that memorial on Saturday. But yeah, I mean, I think it was 2 years ago, Alabama was announcing its schedule, or maybe it was before this season. It was before this season, because he announced the Jacksonville State game on social media, on Instagram Live for Alabama basketball. So yeah, I mean, you know, what he was able to do from a social media standpoint, as well as just be at every game, be there hours beforehand. And it was funny to hear, it was Tyler Barnes that spoke at the memorial, and he talked about how initially it's just some crazy fan that gets there before the team even does, and he's out on the floor, and then he's there after the game. But he really became a part of the team, and you saw that with how guys like Brian Hodgson and Antoine Petway pulled him out of the stands and gave him a plaid jacket. I think he got a piece of the net after they cut those down after beating Auburn to celebrate that regular season championship. And he was really embraced as a part of this team. And, you know, that's really special to see. I mean, Nate Oates and Hodgson obviously had a really close relationship with him. They weren't able, you know, to be at the memorial, be in town. They were out of town for Easter. But, you know, just the way that they reacted on social media is really heartfelt. And it goes to show not only his presence online, but his presence in that gym, and even, you know, resonating into the locker room, what he meant to that program. He was a really special person to a lot of people, and you see that with that outpour of support all over Twitter and Instagram and Facebook and things like that.
Yeah, in hindsight, man, you're even more thankful that fans in the SEC were able to access games, right? I mean, you think about some other leagues, some other areas of the country where that wasn't the case. There is that, I guess, if you're looking for some silver linings, there really aren't any, but at least Luke had access to the things he loved most here in the last few months, right?
Yeah, I mean, it would have been a shame if fans weren't allowed in the stands, and you know, Luke hadn't been able to go to the games, and it sounds like he was doing what he loved. I know one of his loves was Budweiser. There were a few cans on the steps of Coleman, but I think he was a little disappointed up in Indy. They didn't have it on draft where he was celebrating, so he had to kind of swallow his pride a little bit and drink some Miller Lite. But that's just a fun anecdote on who he was and what he enjoyed doing. And yeah, I mean, it was great to see fans, even though it wasn't the number that you wanted in the stands, because this was a special Alabama basketball season. You know, it would have been crazy to see what those crowds would have been like had it been a normal year, because Coleman would have packed almost every night. But regardless of how many fans were in there, I don't think anybody would have beat Luke into the stands to his seat there at the front of the Crimson Chaos. And I'm glad he did get to, you know, enjoy some basketball and enjoy some games on the road.
And we at BamaOnline.com absolutely send our continued thoughts and prayers to the Ratliff family, close friends in general. People still hurting. Very nice touch over the weekend to see not only the University of Alabama from an official capacity honor Luke in a couple of different ways, but even the city of Tuscaloosa with City Hall illuminated in red and white lights in honor of Luke on Saturday and Sunday evenings. Government Plaza downtown also right there in that same area, the Central Parking Transportation Center right there also did the same. Just shows you, man, how impactful Luke Ratliff really was on a number of different levels. And again, light and love to everyone close to him. Hey, Charlie, we did have the men's basketball tournament continuing on with the Final Four over the weekend. Hell of a game Saturday night, man, UCLA and Gonzaga. And what I'm going to ask you is, seeing as how UCLA played Gonzaga off its feet in Alabama, lost to UCLA in overtime in the round of 16. Still would have had Michigan there in the 8. But is it reasonable to wonder in retrospect here what might have happened had Alabama gotten to Gonzaga? Do you think perhaps we could add a similar type of matchup, a similar type of game? I mean, that's a classic on Saturday night.
Yeah, I mean, it's a possibility. I don't think Michigan played very well in the Elite Eight, and you know, some of that has to do with UCLA. But you know, Nate Oates and company talked about it before. I mean, UCLA wants to slow things down and play to their pace, and of course, Alabama wants to speed things up. So you had a clash of different styles in that. I think that's kind of helped them in this tournament run, or helped them, past tense now. But, you know, I think it's reasonable to wonder. I know a lot of Alabama fans are sick to their stomach just to see, you know, that Michigan game in the Elite Eight. I mean, the way that it turned out, I think most people think that Alabama could have won that game had it made it to that round. Now, Gonzaga, I don't know. You know, that's a team that they haven't lost a game dating back to last season. You know, they have just a stellar lineup. So I don't know about that one. I think they could have, had they beaten UCLA in overtime, I think they could have reached the Final Four, but I don't know about getting past the Zags.
You said it earlier about styles. UCLA style, and give Mick Cronin a hell of a lot of credit, man. That team made it extremely difficult on everybody it encountered there on that run. You think maybe Alabama's preference of styles might have played into Gonzaga's strength, whereas UCLA was counter to that with the way they like to play?
I mean, I think so a little bit, yeah. You know, not a lot of people.
I think Gonzaga's comfortable. Gonzaga's comfortable with the way Alabama plays,
yeah,
I think.
You can tell they like to run, even though, you know, they have Timmy and some big guys. I mean, Jalen Suggs can keep up, and some of the guards they have can keep up. So, yeah, I mean, that's the reason that I think that had they gotten past UCLA, which, I mean, hell, that game came down to overtime too, and then they play a Michigan team that's a little beat up and they didn't play their best against UCLA, I think they could get to the Final Four. I think a lot of people projected that early on before they even saw the matchups, but I don't know if they had enough to beat Gonzaga now.
Let's take a quick break, Charlie. And when we come back here on the Bama Online Podcast, we're going to get into some spring football talk. We have scrimmage number one of spring drills behind us. We'll get into that. We'll look ahead to what's to come over the second half of spring football at the University of Alabama. We'll do that more with Charlie Potter, the BamaOnline.com staff, on the Bama Online Podcast right after this.
Jeremy Renner returns to Paramount Plus for a brand new season of the original hit series, Mayor of Kingstown.
My job is to create a balance, avoid a war.
From executive producer Taylor Sheridan, co-creator of Yellowstone.
There's some new players in town, and they brought the plague.
And Antoine Fuqua, director of Training Day.
I know it's always been a war zone, Mike, but this is next level.
The mayor is back in business.
Are you warning me?
You're going to find out.
Mayor of Kingstown, new season streaming June 2nd, exclusively on Paramount Plus.
And we are back with more of the Bama Online Podcast on this Monday, April the 5th, 2021. A lot of basketball talk, a lot of Luke Ratliff talk in the first half of the program today. Now we're going to get into some football, Charlie, as the Crimson Tide last Friday conducted its first spring scrimmage in a couple of years. Forget about just this spring, but got to go back, I guess, to 2019, the last time we were talking spring scrimmages around the capstone. Just from that perspective, it was refreshing. But I guess in terms of storylines for scrimmage number one, obviously quarterback you knew was going to be at the top of that list. And to hear Nick Saban talk and to go by some of the intel from the scrimmage that we were able to gather, sounds like Bryce Young was what he needed to be, at least early in the spring.
Yeah, I mean, so far, unless asked about the quarterbacks in general, you know, Nick Saban's kind of given a Bryce Young update during his opening statement or just kind of heaped praise on Bryce for the way that he's been conducting himself. And one of the things that he's talked about continuously is his ability to manage the game and manage the offense. And he mentioned that on Friday, just talking about how he did a pretty good job in that area. He was accurate with the ball, you know, made some explosive plays, and again, just managed the whole system. So I think that's a good step for Bryce. I mean, understanding the playbook and being able to manage the offense is a big deal. I know game manager is almost a bad word at this point when talking about a quarterback. I don't think Bryce Young is just a game manager. He's an explosive athlete and has a lot of explosive ability. So to hear Nick Saban mention a few explosive plays is good. And, you know, we saw in the clips that they put out later in the weekend that he did have some zip on the ball and he did throw some balls into some tight windows. And I think that's good to see from him. So I think he had a good day. For the most part, he was going against the second-team defense. That's just kind of how Alabama does it. So that left Paul Tyson going against the first-team defense. And it sounds like that first-team defense, especially the defensive front, had a pretty strong showing on Friday. From everything I've gathered, you know, Chris Allen and Will Anderson were pretty much unblockable. They had consistent pressure on Tyson, who had to get rid of the ball and had some quick throws. And the defensive line, both first and second team, did some really nice things. I think the first team defense is kind of coming together. It's still early. There's plenty of things that can change. You still have guys coming in the summer. We don't know what's going to happen with Henry Toa from Tennessee. But to hear that the defense is you know, pretty far along, that's not surprising because the offense has so much to replace. But still, for him to mention Bryce Young in his opening and then to commend the first-team defense, I think all in all, if you're an Alabama fan, to have that and then to hear of no injuries, I think you have to feel pretty good about that first scrimmage.
Yeah, the no injuries angle is always a good thing. And you're right. You know, whereas Bryce is going against the second team defense, it sounds like a good bit. He's doing so against an offensive line that is very much going to be revamped. And a second team defensive line that, when you think about the options, that has played a lot of football. So even in that group, you're thinking the Alabama defense is ahead of the offense, which is something the defense has been trying to catch up with here, it seems like, for a couple of years around UA. A lot of that having to do with how prolific these offenses have been at Alabama of late. But it does sound like, at least, we are back to the days of the defense being ahead in spring practice. And yeah, for Paul Tyson, tough situation. I mean, it does sound like very much that Bryce is in command of that number one spot. But Now, when you're Paul Tyson and you're working behind a very inexperienced offensive line with receivers that, you know, by and large may be consisting of early enrollees, that's a tough spot to be in too when you're the number two quarterback.
It is. I mean, just going against the first team defense is rough. But like you said, the offensive line right now is kind of patched together. You don't have Emile Ekior out there, who's a returning starter. Pierce Quick, who's a guy that I think will be in competition for one of those guard spots, is not out there. So, you know, the first team offensive line from left to right looks like Evan Neal, Tommy Brown at left guard. You have Chris Owens at center, JV and Cohen, who's in his second year at right guard, and a mixture of Damian George and Kendall Randolph at right tackle. Even though I did see, you know, watching the highlights they put out, it did look like J.C. Latham, the true freshman, got some run with the ones at right tackle, but he's been at right tackle with the twos. And that second group is very inexperienced. You have Amari Kite at left tackle. Tanner Bowles, I believe, was at left guard for the most part. Darian Dalcourt at center, Seth McLaughlin at right guard, and then Latham at right tackle. So that's a lot of inexperience on that second-team offensive line. And you're having to block Anderson and Allen and Boigbe and Byron Young and DJ Dell and even LeBrian Ray. So that's a tough road to hoe for those guys. But it does show the depth of the defense. Cause I think the second-team defensive line had a really good day. Guys like Kim Smith, Jamarian Latham, Jameel Burrows, Stephon Wynn. So to hear them kind of, you know, have a solid day against the first group is encouraging, because the offensive line is still a work in progress. There's still a long way to go. Nick Saban said that a lot of these young guys' heads are swimming with how much they're having to take on. And you have a starter that you know is going to step in and fill a guard position that's on the bench right now, Emile Ekior. So, yeah, I mean, the depth of the defense kind of flexed a little bit on Friday, but the same thing goes. I mean, Bryce Young had a good day. He was able to score some touchdowns, get the ball to tight ends. They threw the tight ends quite a bit on Friday.
Yeah, it looked like Latu had an explosive play maybe for a touchdown based on some stuff we saw. Maybe it was situational work, but good to see from him too, right?
Yeah, and I think it was in both situational and just in the scrimmage. And it is worth noting that some of the situational stuff, so they'll put the ball at, like, you know, third and six, you know, third and two, third and long. They'll have goal line situations. That's a red lot of zone. Times when they do that, it's ones against ones. And it sounds like, Latu and Bryce Young have a rapport. And Jaleel Billingsley also had a big day too. So getting the ball to tight end, that sounds like that might be something that Bill O'Brien wants to do. You know, the receivers, you know, obviously John Metchie's not out there, but you know, Slade Bolden is an experienced guy. It sounds like Javon Baker had a pretty solid day. I think he and maybe Xavier Williams scored touchdowns. So that's another area where you have a guy out, but you have a ton to replace with Devontae Smith and Jaylen Waddle leaving. So that is a big opportunity, a big window for some of these young guys to seize roles. And I think that this is a position group, especially at receiver, that, you know, it could change, and we can see guys working the ones, it could alter and be different throughout the entire spring.
Yeah, I think the offense in general, offensive line, wide receiver, you know, those areas, yeah, I agree wholeheartedly, could look different week to week, scrimmage to scrimmage. Running back Brian Robinson, obviously the most experienced guy, but from what we could gather, did it feel like this was maybe the kind of committee approach, or could project it to be at least more the committee approach that we've talked about here and other places?
I think so. For the most part this spring, it sounds like it's been Brian Robinson and Jace McClellan working with the twos. And that's good news for Jace. I think he showed a lot of promise last year. And Keelan Robinson, I think, could be considered the third back. He's worked some with the twos and maybe gotten some run with the ones. But those have consistently been your top three backs. And that says a lot about Keelan, too. I mean, he's a guy that didn't play at all last year. Mm-hmm. Comes in, adds some mass, and
juice.
Now he's a guy that he's right back there in the mix. And, you know, we'll see what happens with Trey Sanders. I mean, he's a guy that's been doing some things, but he obviously didn't scrimmage coming off of that hip injury. You still have Roydell Williams in the fold. Kyle Edwards is another year older. And then you have a five-star in Kamar Wheaton coming in. So I think it could be definitely more of a committee approach. I don't think you're going to see a season like what Najee Harris had last year, even the year before, where he sees a lion's share of the carries. I think they would split it up pretty well. But for the most part, early through spring, or at least midway through spring, it's been Brian Robinson, Jace McClellan as the guys working with the ones, and you could sprinkle in Keelan there as well.
So let's talk about one area of this Alabama defense where you envision, where we think there's the most competition going on. Is it inside linebacker opposite Christian Harris? Is it the corner spot opposite Job? Is it maybe one of those defensive line positions? Which one of those, Charlie, is maybe positioned a certain way right now from a personnel perspective, but by the time we get through A-Day, it could be different?
Yeah, I mean, for the defensive line, I think there's like almost four starters up there, just because you know, Aboigbe, Byron Young, LeBrian Ray, they've all played first team minutes at the defensive end spot, so it's hard to even it is open, but those just all seem like returning starters. It's almost unfair to pin Christian Barmore as a departing starter because a guy like Aboigbe started more games than him. But for me, I would go with corner. Because right now it sounds like Jalen Armour-Davis.
It's just one guy. You're not playing a rotation at corner. You're playing a rotation at DL, but at corner, right? It's going to be one of those dudes, and that's going to be about it, you would think.
Yeah, and they've even in the past they've done rotations at inside linebacker. You know, we've seen you know, Ruben Foster and Sean Dion Hamilton kind of do a by committee approach there. So for corner, it's the biggest for me on the defensive side of the ball. And right now, Jalen Armour-Davis has been the guy that's been there the most consistently. But you know, Nick Saban's mentioned Marcus Banks. That's a guy that we've talked about before, is kind of an under-the-radar player. I know he's kind of dealt with a little bit of an injury, or maybe not an injury, but like a nagging issue. But he's still been out there and working. And then, you know, Jaquincy McKinstry. And it's great to hear Nick Saban call him Kool-Aid. I just love hearing that in press conferences. But he's been working with the twos. It's been Banks and McKinstry there with the twos. With you look at Ronald Williams and Brandon Turnage with the threes. And you're going to have a guy in Kyrie Jackson who a lot of people are high on coming in the summer. So I think that one is where the competition is still to be determined. It could change. You know, we could see maybe Banks work with the ones. Heck, you could maybe see Jaquincy, you know, get some work with the ones. But right now it's been Armour-Davis. And I just think there's a lot of bodies at one spot, and there's a lot of capable options that the competition, I don't think, will be settled by the end of spring.
They love their safeties, and they incorporate them in a lot of what they do in the nickel and dime. So if you're in that corner competition, the stakes are heightened because it could be one guy really for one spot, you know, six guys for one spot. But I guess if you've got some guys that really impress you, you could look at that star position as well for some competition with a couple of those safeties and additionally. So, hey, Charlie, as always, great stuff, man. Always appreciate the time. Good talking with you. Always look forward to doing this.
Yeah, me too, man. It's always good to catch up, and I hate that we had to, you know, start it off with, you know, some somber news. But it has been really good to see Tuscaloosa kind of wrap its arms around the Ratliff family and just show how much that he meant to so many people, even if they've never talked to him before. That was really cool to see.
Yeah, the GoFundMe that was started initially by Brian Hodgson of the Alabama men's basketball staff, and God, last check, that thing was in the $50,000 range. So
yeah.
It's been great to see. And look, need to keep it going. This is something that family's going to need continued support with. I have no doubt about that. But, boy, you can't say enough good things about the Alabama community for how they've shown their support to this point. Charlie, we'll do it again soon.
All right, man. Always good to catch up.
There he goes. Charlie Potter does an outstanding job for us at BamaOnline.com. Travis Ryer, thanking you once again for joining us here on the Bama Online Podcast. If you haven't already, how about a subscription? Leave us a rating and a review while you're there. That would be greatly appreciated as well. Until next time, take care, everybody.
The chilling new original docuseries on Paramount Plus.
Why did he kill his family? The answer lies across the ocean in a woman named Sylvie.
She's a can model.
Where desire leads to deception.
I ended up spending $12,000 and $15,000 a day.
It was addictive.
I can't get you out.
And obsession. obsession leads to murder.
Who did this to your family?
You can't really maintain a fantasy forever.
Control Alt Desire, now streaming on Paramount+.